the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Good morning. This is Jason Bond from Stoneville, Mississippi. We've got another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast from the Bobby Golden Honorary Podcast Studio. Did I get that right, Tom?
You did get that right. I think that's exceptional.
Tom Allen's here with me. We also have Ben Lawrence. We want to kind of introduce you to Ben this morning. But before we do, Tom, do you have anything you want to throw out there for folks?
No, I think we just roll in and introduce Ben and give Ben a chance to talk about who he is and where he came from and maybe what some of his goals and aspirations are for his position. But I think, you know, Ben, introduce yourself. I know that you've been on the podcast before and we're probably on two episodes in the 2018 year, but I think it's good for you to give the listeners some information about yourself.
So last year I was on the podcast either once or maybe twice talking about my PhD research, and I did a little intro then as well, but I originally grew up in the north part of the state, right outside of Oxford, and I got my undergrad at Mississippi State along with my master's in weed science under Jason and my PhD as well in weed science under Jason, so I've got a good decade logged at Mississippi State.
All right, so Ben, how long have you been in the Delta?
Well, I grew up, you know, in my teens coming over hunting and fishing around Clarksdale and Tunica. And then I've been in Leland permanently since 2015. I just moved to Scott about a month ago. And then I had a couple of summers logged in before that, living on the research station and working on research.
So you've been here a number of years. Well, tell us about a little bit about your family, you know, particularly Susan.
You know, most of my family is still concentrated around that Oxford, New Albany area. My wife is from Clarksville, Tennessee, which is just northwest of Nashville. She came to Mississippi State to get her master's. Her mother told her, don't fall in love with some redneck and get stuck here. Fast forward 8 years later, she's living in Scott, Mississippi.
Too late. Too late.
She works for the Department of Agriculture,
and so she's able to do her job from the Delta as well. Is that correct?
Right. The Department of Agriculture in Mississippi State have a great relationship and have worked well with Susan to allow her to continue her job and work from Stoneville and make a trip or two a week to Jackson to check in and to take care of things she needs to there.
Between her random trips to China.
That is correct. And anywhere else in the continental U.S. at a moment's notice.
Well, and obviously, Ben, you hadn't really touched on this, but I think you can kind of pick it up from listening to that. Y'all obviously like it here because you did just say you bought a house and moved to Scott.
Correct. Yeah, we've fortunately, you know, with my tenure at Mississippi State so far, I've made a lot of friends around the Greenville area, you know, Leland, Clarksdale, through Mississippi State and from hanging out with folks. So it was a pretty easy transition to the Delta. My wife not being from here, she said the other day that she's as happy here as she's been since she left home. So that's always a plus if she's happy.
We're proud that you're here for sure. So the stuff that you've done over the years, Ben, you know, on your master's degree, you did work in soybeans. So why don't you give folks just a brief overview of that. I know there's been some time gone by since you thought about a lot of that stuff, but you know, just so folks kind of have an idea what your background is, you know, work-wise.
Now, before I go into that, both my master's and my PhD were kind of a cross-training between weed science, some, you know, pretty agronomic research as well, along with I did a couple of different fertilizer studies in my PhD. So The program overall over those 7 years has forced you not only to work within your discipline, but outside of it as well. In my master's, I did a soybean by row spacing by planting date study to see if we could better control Palmer if we planted earlier with a narrow row spacing, and that's with and without a residual herbicide. Some of that data came out a little inconclusive because of a natural population of Palmer at two different locations. But you know, overall, the gut feeling, if you were walking around those plots, you could tell that the narrower, earlier planted soybeans tended to suppress Palmer better than those which were planted later.
Ben's modest about stuff, but he didn't like the results of that project. He thought it should have turned out different, and, you know, that happens. That's just comes with the, just kind of the territory, I guess, Tom, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's you know, canned research, for lack of a better term.
Right. It rarely turns out exactly like you want it. But I will say that, you know, with the results of that, Ben, you know, has been instrumental in coming up with some of the projects that we're working on now that really carries on some of that work that he did several years ago. So we're doing some different row spacing work now in soybeans in the interest of suppressing Palmer populations. So, you know, as our program goes, that was a pretty influential project, even though it's been several years ago now. That's an example of working together, you know, and creating programs over time.
Well, and it gives you a good well-rounded background that'll certainly help you troubleshooting and problem solving when you get out to the quote unquote real world and start dealing with actual farmer inspired problems.
So then what about the PhD program, Ben?
During my PhD, you know, when I decided to stay and work for Jason, I said I didn't want to work in Palmer and I didn't want to work in soybeans and wanted something brand new. I ended up still working in soybeans and still working with Palmer. But, you know, I transitioned to rice research, and the main focus of that research was to evaluate rice response following drift rates or sublethal rates or produced concentrations of paraquat across multiple timings, if we could manipulate fertilizer regimes and help bring the rice out of it. And then we had some mixture studies with residual herbicides.
So what's your overall take-home message from that work? Don't get paraquat on your rice. I stole that from you.
Just be mindful, you know, when people are doing burn down applications with paraquat, regardless of what's in the tank, to fields adjacent to where those burn down applications are going. If adjacent fields are to be planted to rice, or if the rice is up or at varying growth stages.
You know, again, Ben won't say it, so I can. When he gave his first talk on paraquat on rice, it might have been the first talk about paraquat drift on rice. For whatever reason, that problem's fairly unique to our state. There's been tons of work done on, you know, glyphosate drift on rice, Liberty drift on rice, New Path drift on non-clearfield rice, but just nothing has really ever been done on paraquat drift on rice. And so everything Ben did was kind of making it up as you go. I mean, he had a plan, and we executed the plan, but we also had no way to anticipate, you know, what those results were going to be. So I'd say that was a pretty big project for a graduate student, and, you know, delivered on it all the way around.
And super important topic. And I think that has led itself into some other things and will definitely help Ben in a well-rounded vision of what goes on from an agronomic standpoint.
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, after that, the first year that we did Ben's project, we realized, hey, this is way more work than one guy can do. And so Justin McCoy started a PhD in Bobby's project, and, you know, we designed a whole nother program for him, you know, looking at different parts of paraquat drift on rice. And now both those guys are done. Ben's done, and Justin is just wrapping his stuff up as we speak. And so then we have another PhD student, Tamika Sanders, who's just starting out this summer doing all the stuff that, you know, the questions that we came up with based on the results of Ben and Justin. So, you know, that's another example of doing something and then carrying it on, you know, through the program.
So, all right, Ben, you said, I think, while we were talking, setting things up, that you'd officially been in this position like 2 weeks. So what's your plan for your first year, which would be the 2019 season?
I guess I technically started July 1, worked 3 days, then I had 4th of July, and then was here a week, and then we went to a meeting last week that took up most of the week. So I kind of knew going in that starting in the middle of the season would be different transition. You know, the way I'm trying to approach this is really spending this time and through the fall getting out and meeting people. Going to some of the meetings that I haven't ever been to. I've kind of been mainly focused in weed science meetings, but getting involved in some of the agronomy meetings as well, and really getting a plan together for implementing research for 2020.
So what do you think you'll be looking at for 2020? What kind of needs do you think that you'll be addressing for next year?
Well, one of the biggest needs are problems that, you know, from this year with the crazy weather and planting conditions and, you know, replants up to, you know, I've heard up to four replants going on. A lot of the ground came out of corn production to go into soybean production. So some of the stuff that we've talked about around the programs here at the DREC is implementing some research that evaluates the optimal time to kill corn and then replant beans into it and what kind of effects you have, or maybe any other cropping system, I guess, depending on the market and what you're set up to do.
Just to echo what Ben said, you know, that's probably my number one call for several weeks. You know, probably, I don't remember now, probably that latter, after we got three straight weeks of rain in April, and nobody did anything. A lot of that corn that they got planted latter half of March into that first few days of April, you know, a lot of that didn't make it, had to be terminated, and it was all spread out, you know, little corn, big corn. Corn's still coming up, and so I think we uncorked a lot of questions. So I think that'll be really timely information. And I, you know, what Ben and I have talked about, just riding in a truck, some of that stuff, you know, it may not be useful in 2020 or 2021. Hopefully it's not useful in 2020 or 2021, but it's going to come back around. You know, in the next few years, we're going to have another really wet spring, and we're going to have a lot of questions about replanting. So I think that's going to be really important, you know, really important gap to fill in.
Oh, and certainly useful information. Like you said, I mean, that's the hard part about a season like 2018. It's been a challenge for everybody, farmers, people doing research. But I think that that'll help address some of those issues in the future, working that into a research program, and it'll fit somewhere for sure.
So, Tom, I see, you know, a lot of your corn out here in one field on the station. The low end of it's got some crazy looking corn along the low end. So how would some of this stuff, you know, factor into the things that you do?
Any of those flooded situations, I mean, we've always ended up with a ton of questions, and most of those questions have been about, you know, what do we do if a field floods? Is that all going to get this crazy top-downy mildew that we end up with? And I think there are several factors that have to occur for that to affect a field on a large scale. And any of the field situations I've had an issue with, it's been pH of the soil in addition to flooded conditions for an extended period of time. But most of that corn, if you drive around right now to Mississippi Delta and see corn plants sticking way up over the top of everything, that's your crazy top downy mildew in most cases. And it typically just affects small areas of fields. And it doesn't, to do a test on that would be difficult. That's, you know, pie in the sky type thought for a plant pathologist. I wish we could do something to address that, you know, and it just goes back to the make sure you do a good job of managing drainage.
Well, we got a levee plow, man. We could pull a levee around it and flood it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's something I definitely should consider for sure.
It would be well water.
No, that's true. But that's a soil-borne organism, so it's not coming in on the rainwater.
Didn't you tell me the basically the topsoil or the soil right there at the base of the plant, it gets up in the whirl, and that's what causes a lot of it.
You get any of that soil up over the top of the plant and within the whirl itself, and that fungal organism then gets into the plant and affects it by producing wonky tassels, or in some cases an ear where the tassel is, or extreme tassel production where the ear should be, or that 13 to 14 to 15 to 16 foot tall plant that sticks out in the middle of a field somewhere.
Yeah, and that's what, of course, you can still see that, and that's what I was referring to when we started this. So Ben, on, you know, the whole replant concept and terminating stands, what ideas do you have on the soybean side of that? You know, terminating soybeans is not, I don't think, all that complicated. I mean, it probably can be at times, but you know, what's some of the things that you've thought about for soybeans?
Well, you've alluded to some of it, that, you know, Reed Kelly's project, looking at row spacings, you know, for weed suppression. Going into this position, knowing it was more agronomically based and my traditional training in weed science, I naturally went back to some of the agronomic experience I have in soybeans with evaluating row spacing. And, you know, a lot of that research was done, 20 years ago with the early production systems and airing the row space. And it's always rattled around in my mind that with the price of seed, can we manipulate our row spacings and adjust our seeding rates to help compensate, especially in years like this when price is low? Can we find a different shift to optimize production systems?
So maybe like lower seeding rates on narrower rows, is that kind of where your mind is?
And if I remember correctly, Trent's done a lot of research on not necessarily failed soybean stands, but, you know, replant options and, you know, where that optimum is and still have achievable yield of what your desired plant population was. So I think it'd be cool to work with him and take some of that data and, you know, put it in an optimal system as compared to, you know, a failed stand, right, or replant, and see if we could cut some of that cost anywhere.
I couldn't even say, but Trent was telling me last week the number, you know, he kind of had a baseline stand to keep going into this year or maybe last year, you know, when they were finishing up that research, and he's adjusted it on down to some what I thought were some pretty shockingly low numbers. And I'm not even going to say what a number is because I don't remember what it was, but I just remember when he told me that, I kind of cringed a little bit because I thought, man, that's not very many soybeans. But, you know, to your point, that seed cost is a huge deal. And if we could adjust that some and get away with it, you know, and still produce an optimum, if not maximal yield, you know, then that's definitely, you know, a target to shoot for.
All right, Ben, so where are you located in Stoneville? Where's your office? Because I think, you know, I still get, and I joke with folks about, you know, I live in Cleveland. My house is fairly well known. I do have some consultants drop some things off. People run into me in the grocery store, and they're like, man, I thought you lived in Starkville.
Tom has the only house in Cleveland with two driveways.
That's right. I do have two driveways, but it used to be a duplex. So that makes sense when you say that, because you can still, there's actually two water lines that go into that house too, although it's now just hooked up and there's just one water meter. But there are two water lines because the actual formal dining area, quote unquote, because it's not really much of a dining area, used to be the kitchen of the second residence.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Where was the second kitchen at?
Yeah, it's where the dining area is.
So everybody can picture what Tom's, the right floor plan of Tom's house.
Yeah, just don't pay any attention. Just close your eyes. You won't have any idea about the floor plan, but, you know, I'm kind of quiet about that. But, you know, it's in the older part of Cleveland. We're like two blocks from downtown, which is actually really cool. But
Tom hijacked his own question there.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I took my own question. I'm answering, so I'm chasing a rabbit, as my wife would say, as I often do. But Ben, where are you located in Stoneville? Where's your general office? How would somebody go about getting in touch with you?
So my office was a pretty easy transition. I didn't move offices. It's 159 in the Hurt Building. You know, anybody listening that's been there before, it's in the same place. And anybody that doesn't know where I am, that's where I'm at.
And that would be in the new building.
That's right. That's the new building.
That's right beside the railroad tracks is the way I describe it. Not the main building.
Yeah, not the administrative complex.
So that's awesome, man. Well, we're going to wrap up. Ben, glad to have you, man. Really look forward to working with you, you know, in your new capacity. And Tom, you got anything you want to wrap up with?
No, I just, you know, I echo Jason's comments. It's nice to have Ben on board. It's good to have somebody here who's been here for a while and was a grad student here. And it's nice to have already gotten to know him. And, you know, I think we'll continue that in the future.
All right. Well, if you need Ben, you can catch up with me or catch up with Tom, and he'll be at all the meetings this winter. So we're going to jump off now. But if you need us for anything, just give us a call.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.